Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. So today on the show, we would love to take your phone call or answer any questions that you've got. You can call us, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. Or email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag right away here in the show. Before we do, I guess I would just say it's a Friday the 13th, and a lot of people view that as an unlucky day. And whether you do or you don't, I guess I just want to encourage you that there are a lot of good things happening in agriculture right now. So we've been watching here the last couple of months as commodity prices have gone up and input costs have gone down since last year. So we're very encouraged as we go into the prepay season here. A lot of people in our area wrapped up harvest pretty early, got a lot of fall tillage work done, got a lot of fall fertility on. So in our area especially, we're fairly well set for spring. We've lost a little bit of time, though, with all the snow we've had. So we went 3.5 months with no rain. Or virtually no rain from, I think, July 5th or 6th was our last real rain. And then here just a week ago, we get an inch of rain. Then we get a half an inch of precip, which was in the form of snow. So we had 6 inches of snow on top of the 1 inch of rain. So that was kind of welcome, but we had a little bit of field work we were trying to wrap up yet. So anyway, we're still looking at a lot of snow outside. Hopefully that melts away soon. That would be great. But anyway, just so you kind of know where we're at right now. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Got some feedback from John here. We visited with him last week on Friday, and he said a couple of things. First of all, I mentioned we didn't fertilize in the fall, only in the spring. I should have said our summer and fall fertilization plan for the following year is broiler manure with or without a cover crop. Now, I wanted to ask about fertilizing a cover crop. Because of the summer drought in our area, a lot of cover crops were harvested this past week. Now, this confused me when you said this, John, harvested cover crop. But you said you guys have stated if a cover crop is to be harvested,
yep,
it should be treated as a crop.
Right.
In our case, we have 400 ewes, and we bought barley cover crop from a neighbor. Could you comment on what we could have done about fertilizing it? We knew back in August that we were going to end up harvesting it.
Okay, so I don't know if we had his soil test before or not, but we're basically going to treat that cover crop as a crop because that's really what it is. If you're going to harvest it, you're going to graze it, you're going to do anything so you get income off that, that is now a crop. And now we got to figure out, all right, what can we do to make that better? So that goes to everything from soil fertility to weed control, insect control, disease control. We want to make sure that crop that's growing out there is as good as possible. So yes, when we talk about cover crops, what we mean is literally just something that will grow out there. And hopefully it turns out good. If it doesn't, it doesn't, whatever. We just throw the seed out there, call her good. So there are, in a lot of areas, when you talk about manure in general, then there are certainly sensitive areas out there, really all around the world. But if people are worried about nitrogen loss from manure in the fall, when normally there might not be anything growing there, that's where, you know, the cover crop is really doing a job for you. And so again, we're not really looking at, you know, weed control, disease, insects, fertility, any of that stuff. It's like, okay, the cover crop's doing a job for the soil. So I'm just saying that would be a good advantage or a good example of a true, what we would call a true cover crop, as opposed to something you're getting income off of.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. This comes from Marty in North Carolina. He said, you guys talk a lot about using Trifluralin, Valor, and Metribuzin,
yep,
as pre's for soybeans.
Yes.
Instead of purchasing three individual products, is there a good premix or two that you would suggest?
Sure. So Authority MTZ, for example. And we often say buy Valor or Authority, buy Metribuzin, buy Trifluralin or Prowl. But yes, there are some combinations of these things. The most common one would be that, the Authority MTZ. We often don't say Authority MTZ because then that starts to get confusing. And that's one of the biggest problems I have with these, with a lot of these premixes that come out, is you may not know necessarily what's in that. I want people to know what's in it and specifically what we're looking for. So the other thing could be a concern that, okay, maybe the metribuzin's too high in relation to the authority that's in there. So I don't know what your soil type is like, but you know, a lot of times we talk about, okay, I want a third of a pound of metribuzin. Well, if I want that, is that going to give me the appropriate rate of authority, or do I need to spike in some straight authority, which would be called Spartan, or some Valor or something like that? I mean, you can't overdo it with two PPOs, but I'm just saying to get you up to the full rate, you might have to do that depending on your situation. So, for example, we work with a number of farmers in Minnesota and North Dakota, and even in South Dakota to some degree, that have an 8 pH or a low 8s pH. Well, they can't use a third of a pound of metribuzin. They can use a sixth of a pound or an eighth of a pound, and it'll work great. But when they cut that Authority MTZ, they're cutting their authority rate. And I don't want them to cut their authority rate. So then I'll usually say, all right, do the metribuzin at the low rate, and then either go Spartan, or you could do some Authority MTZ to get your metribuzin, but spike in more Spartan, or use Valor. And authority, when I say Spartan and authority are the exact same thing. Spartan's just the straight goods product.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Mike in New Zealand. He said, this might not apply in the U.S., but I get boron in a DAP boron boost product. They put 0.07% boron on here in New Zealand in that product. The advantage is with so little boron to add, getting a decent dry spread is difficult, so they coat each granule with just a tiny little bit. Also wanted to mention, you guys have talked about calcium, safening boron. Totally agree. That definitely ends up happening. Boron gets... helps get the calcium working in the system and helps protect against overdoing the boron. All right, thanks for the comments, Mike. We really appreciate that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
A history of success means proven performance. But let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Thanks for joining us today. You can also call and ask an agronomic question at 844-44-AG-PHD or email us radio@agphd.com. Head down to Texas now. We got Cliff with us. Clifford, how are you doing today?
We're great, thank you.
I understand you got some prickly pears down there.
Oh, boy, do we. And part of the problem I have is I didn't realize they were so thick. So as I was mowing down the goat weed, I was shredding prickly pear as well, which is a big no-no. So now I've got a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
And I need to know what your suggestion is, a product, combination of products, 1-2 punch, 1-2-7 punch, whatever. What should I do?
Well, I was going to say this, Clifford, first of all, kind of jokingly a little bit, but we'll get comments sent to us from people that say, oh, don't use herbicides. All these plants are nice. I want those people that send those emails to come out to your farm and dig those plants up. They do look great in landscaping. That'd be awesome. So I think those people should just come take them. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old stories where when nobody liked barbed wire.
All right, so you mentioned a 1-2 punch or maybe a 1-2-7 punch. You know, this is a real challenge unless you hit it with the right product at the right rate. And the right product is going to be Tordon, and the right rate is at least 1 quart to the acre. A lot of people don't want to do it because, let's face it, I mean, everybody, including ourselves, we're trying to get by farming for as little money as possible. And if you run with a quart of Tordon, it's probably going to cost you $15 an acre. So that will give you long-term residual. It'll give you a good burn down, everything. So that's probably the way to go. There have been people who've tried Roundup, but obviously that kills the grass. There have been people that have used Remedy Ultra. That is a burn down product, kind of like Tordon, only it has zero residual. And they'll literally throw oil with it almost anything they can, extra adjuvants, hop up the adjuvants just to try to get as much burn as possible. So, you know, you could certainly do that if you didn't want long-term residual. But if this is a long-term pasture, I'd put Tordon out there. That will not only kill prickly pear, it'll kill thistles, leafy spurge, a whole bunch of other weeds. So, yep, it'll cost you some money, but then you, for the most part, should be able to eliminate a lot of your prickly pear issues with just one shot.
Well, the way I look at it, it's going to cost me $15 an acre to buy pasture. So I think that's pretty cheap.
Yep. So, nope, that's the way to go. You could go even higher than that on the rate. If the 1 quart rate doesn't quite finish off every last prickly pear, in the future, you know, in the very worst spots, you could bump the rate a little bit. Technically, it's labeled up to 2 quarts to the acre. So, but I think in a lot of cases, your 1 quart rate is going to do pretty good.
All right. Thank you so much. Love your show, by the way.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Clifford.
All right, let's head up to Midwestern Ontario. We got John with us right now. John, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing well. What's happening around your farm?
Well, we're just on our last 100 acres of corn. And if the phone doesn't ring for any custom work, that'll be after tomorrow afternoon. It'll be time to clean up equipment and put stuff away. And there's a bit of fall tillage to do. And maybe we're going to try and get some potash down on the corn ground. Do some fall tillage and wait for winter to set in.
Yeah, it doesn't look like we're going to have to wait too long. We've already got a nice dash of white here. We're supposed to warm up and it's going to go away. But it seems like whenever you get a little bit of that stuff, it draws in some more.
Winter comes inevitably. But having said that, last weekend, over the course of Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and through into Tuesday, we had temperatures up near 70.
Wow.
Low 60s right up to 70. It's just almost unheard of in this area at this time of the year.
Yeah.
I was looking at records from last year for yesterday, within a couple days of now, we had like 4 inches of snow on the ground and lows of minus 10 Celsius at night. So it's quite a change.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, you mentioned the fall tillage, so if you don't have frost down in the ground, you still have a shot. When you look at the potash, is it that's your normal plan, putting potash out and tilling it in? Or is it an optimistic year here where, hey, it's dry conditions, we got time to do it, let's get it done?
I think, yeah, this is my son's decision, not mine. He's going to put, I don't know how many pounds of potash down on the corn ground. It's not super dry, but it's not super muddy either. He thinks the ground will carry well enough to get that down. It's not normally what we do. Normally, all our fertilizers are applied in the spring because we're done harvest like a month earlier this year than last year.
So we have an opportunity, and I think he's just going to give it a shot just to save that little bit of time in the spring.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I was thinking about when you said it was your son's decision, and I thought, uh-oh, that reminded me of a year where Brian made the decision for our dad that, you know, dad needed some more potash. And yeah, it was kind of an unpleasant Christmas that year. And let's just say the gifts were non-existent for at least one season, but it turned out good. Fortunately, we got good yields after that. And then dad kind of came around that, oh, okay, I guess it wasn't such a bad decision, but he was not on board at all. Are you on board with that decision, John?
Well, let me tell you how this the farm operation here works. The entire operation is my son's. Like, I only am here to help, and I don't make any of the management decisions at all. I make suggestions based on my experience, but I was out of the business for well over 20 years.
Wow.
Before he got started.
Okay.
Yeah, I had I wasn't making any money back in the early 90s there, mid-90s, and yep. I still had a pretty good off-farm job, so I just made the decision to get rid of all my land and concentrate on my job. And then when my son grew up, when he got to be in his early 20s, he said, I want a farm. So he's now 31, and here we are. So,
yep.
You know, and things have changed so much since I quit. Like, we've been at it again 5 years now, but things have changed so dramatically in the interim. Like, I didn't even know what was going on when we first got back at it. So, like I said, he's the beneficial owner of the business. He makes all the decisions. If I have a suggestion that I think, you know, is worthwhile putting my 2 cents worth in, I do. But other than that, I just try to be, I'm very hands-off. I just, what do you want me to do today, son?
Well, kudos to you, John. That's a tough transition sometimes to really work for your son, but that's a great way to go forward long-term, letting him make decisions now while you're still around to help as well.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, if I don't agree with something, I let him know. But ultimately, he makes up his own mind, and I'm at peace with what he does, and it seems to be working out fairly well for him. He's growing every year, so that's a good thing.
You bet. You bet it sure is. Well, John, yeah. It was really nice talking to you today. Good luck here. Hopefully that fall tillage goes well and the good weather continues.
Well, we're supposed to get a bit of snow on Monday, but then it's going to be cooler, but I think the snow is going to go away again, so we'll get that done. And I appreciate talking to you guys, and I try to listen to you every chance I get, and I really enjoy your show.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John. We really appreciate it.
Take care.
You bet. You as well. Brian, another boron question came in. This was from Doug. He said, a couple weeks ago, the guys were talking about a new boron source they were using. Just curious what that was.
Well, it wasn't a new source. It was called New Bor. So N-U-B-O-R. But the whole point here is we don't really care what source you use. It doesn't matter to us. We just said, hey, dry is less expensive than liquid. Now, that's not to say liquid doesn't have a nice fit. So if you use just a little bit of liquid, let's say in a 2x2 at planting time, or you used it to go with your pre-emerge herbicide, you used a little bit in your foliar applications. Those are all great fits for the liquid. Where we talk about dry quite a bit is when we are looking at trying to build soil test levels. So that's where it seems like the dry fits pretty well because we can get a lot more pounds for less money.
Okay, speaking about dry, Roger in Illinois said, is ammonium sulfate stable enough to spread on top of the soil before planting and let it be rained in, or does it need
yes.
to be worked in?
No. It's just fine. Just you can put it out there and let the rain work it in. I'm not very concerned about it. Now, of course, you could lose any nitrogen. It could convert over. You could lose it up in the air. But generally speaking, no, we don't get that worried about that particular form.
All right, thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
The Pentair Hypro Express Flush Valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express Flush Valve. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Get tough on herbicide-resistant weeds. Add Tough 5-EC into your post-emergence tank mix and increase control of some of the toughest-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds that plague corn, such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide with an underutilized mode of action that provides faster kill and application flexibility for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BelchamUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our phone lines are open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you have an agronomic question, let's head out to Colorado here. We got Mitch with us right now. Mitch, how's it going?
Hey, how are you guys doing up there?
We're doing pretty well. We're watching the snow slowly melt away and counting the days till we can get back out in the field and finish up some fall work. How about you?
Hey, that's pretty good. Hey, I'm pretty much on to my wintertime cowboying right now. So that's about how things go down here.
Outstanding. Okay, so what does wintertime cowboying mean to you?
Oh, just run whatever I can and on some corn stalks, cleaning that up, cleaning up any corn that might be dropped in the field, anything like that, and put some weight on them and turn them around and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's a good system. I really like that when you can utilize farm, like crop production and livestock all together. And I look at it this way, that I'm converting corn stalks and volunteer corn for next year into manure that's going to be readily available food out in the field. I think it's great.
Absolutely. That's the plan.
So as you're doing that, are most of the fields in your area fenced in, or have you got to be running around putting electric fence up all over?
I've been running around putting up electric fence, so that's been pretty much my task for the past week right now.
Yeah, you're a busy boy then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I notice around our area, fences just keep disappearing, and so that seems to be the option if you want to graze some stalks.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and I mean, you know, as far as a fence, it wears out, it gets in the way when you're wanting to actually work, and it's fairly cheap and economical to throw up an electric fence when you need it and go for it.
Now, how was the crop this year? Do you have a lot of corn on the ground, or is it kind of normal?
Fairly normal. I hate to say after the past couple, 5 years of really great yields, I think we're pretty much back to average. So the drought, even on the irrigated stuff, kind of set it back pretty hard. So.
Yeah, there was a lot of heat this year, and I think, you know, for your area too, I don't think you guys normally get the extreme heat like you had this year, do you?
We have in the past. It hasn't quite been like this the past couple of years, but certainly this is pretty much normal.
Okay. So what is the game plan for next year? Same rotation, same plan?
Kind of, sort of. I think I'm, at least myself personally, I'm running a little bit short on corn is what my plan is, and maybe throw in a few different things into the rotation and see what to go from there. So
when you mentioned wintertime cowboying, I got thinking, are these cattle like breaking out all the time, or is it just a matter of moving them from one field to the other?
Oh, just a matter of moving them from one field to the other. So
yeah, it sounded entertaining. I was going to say, where's the video? I want to watch this. This could be good. Oh, awesome. Good talking to you, Mitch. Thank you so much, and have a good winter here.
You bet. Have a good one. Thank you.
Got James on with us now in Nebraska with the unanswerable questions. I love it, James. It's Stump Brian hour. You got a couple good ones. Why don't you hit him with your agronomic questions?
Okay, so there's a field I do some scouting in. It's a sandy quarter, real sandy, irrigated. And about 8 years ago, the yield is horrible, and they said it was like 100 bushel off. And they found out it had tested positive for like 10 different corn nematodes, and three of them are really high numbers. And then the seed treatment was enough to where it got, you know, normal yields. And then this year it dropped off, and the roots were chewed up really bad, and it looked like it was going to be probably 225 bushel yield, and then he wasn't able to give it enough water at the end, and it made only 150 bushel. And looked at the roots, and it was like it was just infested with nematodes, and it had Poncho 500 Votivo on it. What can a guy do if you want to keep going with corn, or should we be rotating to beans?
Well, my first thought is, number one, I want to continue using seed treatments. Yes, you mentioned the Poncho Votivo, but different companies have different products, so you can just talk to the seed companies and ask them what they have for their particular brand. But beyond that, if it's me, I might actually go back to old counter insecticide. So I'll tell you a quick story here, James. I used to, this is a long time ago, back when I was in college and right after college, so this is 30 years ago, I was working for FMC in northern Nebraska. And being a farm kid from South Dakota, I didn't know a whole lot about nematodes. We didn't have much for nematodes in my area. And I get down into Nebraska, and all these farmers I'm talking to are going, yeah, we really like Furidan, probably more for the nematode activity than the rootworm activity. And I'm going, what? Nematodes, really? And it was basically Furidan and counter that were getting used. It was one or the other that was getting used by everybody. Well, Furidan's off the market, has been for a long time, but counter is still there. I mean, you got to buy it in a closed system, but still, that's not a bad nematode product. And then it will give you activity on rootworms and some other secondary pests. So if it's me, I'm going to use the seed treatment, plus I'm going to go use counter. So that's what I would do.
Okay. And if we rotated to beans, the reason why you went corn for so many years is because there's a really bad problem with wild cucumbers.
Okay.
And prior to the last few years, you know, there's just Roundup beans, and now, of course, you can go Enlist or
right.
Extend or whatever. Yep. Would the Enlist or Extend system be enough to, would it keep hitting it back enough to
probably
stop it?
Probably. Yeah. You know, with wild cucumber, and there are a number of weeds like that, these viney weeds, Roundup never was the best. So people talk about resistance and that it built up and all this stuff. And I'm going, I don't know about that. I mean, when we used to use Roundup 30 plus years ago, we had issues back then too with weeds like that. So you have to run a higher rate of Roundup, a lower rate of water, and then a lot of times that makes it does make the droplet more concentrated, and then we usually can get a little better control with the Roundup. Otherwise, to your point, either 2,4-D or dicamba will have some effectiveness on that. And I'm not going to say it's going to be perfect, but it's going to keep burning it back, and Liberty will help a little bit as well if you get coverage. So, yeah, you've got a lot of options there.
Okay. Otherwise, with Enlist, would it be like if you went Liberty and Enlist together, would that be
even better?
That much more effective on it? Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, we've done a little bit of that. And, you know, prior to, I think last year, maybe the year before, we were never able to do that before because we didn't have these Enlist beans. We didn't have the label for that or anything. And there had never been a reason why somebody like in a burn down situation would even think about going Liberty because it's a lot more expensive than Roundup together with 2,4-D. So we start putting Liberty together with 2,4-D and we're like, whoa, that is smoke. I mean, it did not take very long and you could see that those weeds were dying and we've killed everything. There hasn't been one weed that's escaped that 2,4-D Liberty thing. So we really like it other than the price.
Huh.
So you
can get kochia pretty good on that mix too.
Oh
then.
Yeah. Yeah. Dead. All of them.
Okay.
As long as you get coverage. Keep in mind with Liberty, coverage is the real key. So there's a big, big difference in how you want to spray Liberty versus Roundup. With Roundup, you know, less water a lot of times is better. With Liberty, we want more water because we've got to coat as much of that plant as possible. And we want small spray droplets. So when we have big spray droplets, it reduces drift. But, and so I get it with the 2,4-D, the dicamba, everybody's all worried about the drift. But with this new 2,4-D, it's not, it doesn't seem to volatilize. We don't have the drift issues like we did with the old 2,4-D or even any of the dicambas on the market. So you can get by with at least a little bit smaller droplet, and that does help you with that Liberty combination.
Yep, absolutely. Would you go more than 20 gallon per acre, or do you think 20 is enough?
No. 20 is absolute max that I would recommend spraying a herbicide because then the problem is you start getting the concentration too low of the herbicide to the water. So, nope, 20 gallons would be about it. But, yeah, it's interesting. Like when you talk Roundup, our dad actually was in the development of Roundup. He was involved in the development of Roundup as a farmer tester. This is back, I don't know, 45 years ago or whatever. And he just said the higher the rate of Roundup or higher the rate of water, the worse the control would get. And so that's I just thought of that as we were talking about this water thing. And, yeah, Liberty, I'd say 15 to 20 gallons. Roundup, we always want to be less than 10. Hey, thanks a lot for the call, James. Appreciate it. And best of luck down there. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. You can join the discussion by calling us at 844-44-AG-PHD. That's just what Kevin did in Western Illinois. Kevin, thanks for calling in.
Well, good afternoon to balmy Baltic, South Dakota.
Yeah, it's balmy today. I don't think we're above freezing, but the sun's out at least. No, we're above freezing a little bit.
Yeah. So how you all doing?
Yeah, we're doing well. We got a lot of fall work done, so we're happy about that. Got a little more to go, but you know what? We got a break in the action. We got to bring machinery inside the heated shop and have something to do for a few days, so that's okay too.
Yep, life's good, isn't it?
Yeah, how'd things turn out in your area this year?
Well, here where we're at, while we really had a tremendous spring, and it looked like we were really off to a really good start, and then all of a sudden came June 30th, which was 80 inches of rain in a matter of about 4 or 5 hours, and that kind of set things back. Caused troubles with a lot of flooding, ponding that was for several days, and loss of nutrients and so forth. And then from there, why we jumped into about a week later into extreme heat, which caused some issues with pollination. So as a whole, the corn crop in this area kind of suffered from it. You know, it wasn't one of our better years, and it wasn't extremely bad either. And then we got along, had a pretty nice summer, then starting in late August and September, it got dry, and since about the middle of August, we've had about 0.8 inches of rain in this area. And of course, a while back, we were in red flag warnings, you know, with the wind blowing and everything and the heat that we had. So, but soybeans kind of fared through it pretty decently, considering what the weather conditions were. They had some pretty good yields here, considering, you know, that they just didn't have much rain to work with when they were towards the end of blooming and filling.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to a number of guys about this, and the theory that I've kind of bought into is when we had decent soil, it was able to hold a lot of the rain. And granted, there's a lot of runoff when rain comes that fast, like you got the end of June. But at least they're going into that drought time with the full soil profile, and the good ground paid for itself this year. Would you say the same thing?
I think good ground we're going to refer to as fertility. You know, if you got good fertility, it just holds up better. You know, I would agree at that point, yes.
You know, I think about that heat too and lack of rainfall. That means more sunshine. And I get it for the guys that can irrigate. That's often a good thing. Although we were talking to Mitch in Colorado and he said even on the irrigation, it was just so blasted hot that wasn't able to help. But when you get a lot of sunshine, a lot of times that is really a good thing for soybeans. So I agree. We had guys in our area too where we didn't get any rain for about 3 months. And there were guys that had really good soybean yields compared to what they thought.
Yeah. Well, in my case, I got part of my ground's under irrigation, part is not. And on a low CEC soils, even though the fertility is there, the irrigation made a huge difference. But on higher CEC grounds with good fertility, where the irrigation run in and out on it, you really didn't see much difference. You know, the ground just had enough capability to keep it sustained even on the non-irrigated part of that higher CEC grounds.
So, Kevin, anything pop up this year agronomically that you're like, huh, I wonder what I could do to solve that issue?
I'm running into, with looking at my micronutrient results back, you know, I was always coming back showing high rates of manganese And so started trying to look into it, and you guys made a suggestion here about 6 months ago, soil and radio, and I picked up on it, and I thought, I'm going to have well water tested here, and I had it sent in, and sure enough, even the water that we're getting with in this where I'm at is high in manganese.
Okay.
Manganese or magnesium?
No, manganese.
Manganese, huh? Interesting.
Yep. I mean, it is. I'm running, you know, I've got, well, I'm looking at a soil sample right here, right now, on a field, and the average throughout that field on that is like 74 pounds per acre that's available. And the lab that did the results on the water, I called them and talked to them and said, it's highly unusual. You know, we just hardly ever see those kind of results coming back out of the irrigation water like that. Said it's kind of a real unusual situation there.
Yeah, that is unusual. You know, over in Europe, though, there are a lot of places that'll have hundreds of pounds of manganese into some of the super high yield wheat areas. So when you say 74 pounds is available of manganese, I don't look at that as a bad thing, that's for sure. It's just a lot of times when we have something that we would consider pretty high, you want to look at kind of your ratios with some of your other nutrients and making sure your copper is up and your zinc is up and your phosphorus and things like that. We've been running a lot of ratios of nutrient to yield, and that's really helped us kind of fine tune some of those ratios.
Yeah. And from what research I've done on this, they say that once it gets to where it's about 100 pounds of the available acre, it does cause some issues with soybeans, but it will not cause any issues in the production of corn. So, you know, I'm 44 years into farming, and before it gets to be a problem here, it's somebody else will be, you know, farming as hell. Otherwise, you know, I look at my micronutrients, and I'm in pretty decent shape. But boy, I tell you, I'm in this Mississippi River bottoms here. And, you know, it's a challenge on the high CEC soils, just trying to keep this base saturation up on the K. It's just hard to do now. Lower CECs, you know, I can manage it pretty good, but on the high CECs, I have troubles.
Yep, I agree. We're in the same boat with you, Kevin. Well, Kevin, we got to get running, but hey, thanks a lot for calling in today. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you out there.
Yep, you all stay safe, and everybody out there stay safe from the COVID, and boy, I hope we have another year at least as good as this is for everybody. You all have a good day. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Or a year even better, maybe.
Yeah. Well, he said at least as good. At least as good as this one. Hey, we got another Kevin online, in this time in North Central Iowa. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Doing pretty well. So did you get all your fall work done, or you still got a ways to go?
Oh, we still got a little bit of hog manure to put on yet and a little bit of tillage.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think about the manure. The guys in our area have been pretty aggressive on that, but you're right. There's still some to go up here, too.
Yeah, and we were out working in last Monday and in the rain and everything and worked until we couldn't pull the units through the field anymore and said, that's enough.
Yep, yep. So do you have a question for us today, too, Kevin? I want to make sure we get to that.
Yeah. Listening to one of your programs before and talking about spring-applied fertilizer, and I usually put on gypsum and with a little bit of potash in it to help the gypsum spread in the spring. Am I better off putting that on in the fall? We'd no-till into corn stalks with our beans.
Most likely you'd be better off putting it on in the fall. Yes. It'll give it more time to break down. So you could try it both ways, but I'm going to assume fall would be the time to do it. What you're talking about for combination, anytime we've done that, we've always done it in the fall.
Okay. Well, we usually put the gypsum down for the sulfur on the bean ground, and then that'll have enough to carry over into the corn. So.
Yep. Now, Kevin, as you say this, and we talk about fall. Okay, fall means something a lot different to us where we farm. Yes, you're in Iowa, we're in South Dakota, than it does to somebody in, let's say, Mississippi or Alabama. Because basically, fall to us is button right up against winter. And when we freeze, nothing happens to anything. So in other words, people get all worried too about nitrogen applications, and I'm going, well, it's like I put it on in the spring if I put it on a week or two before my freeze up. So nothing is really happening over the winter. And this is part of why we talk more about fall applications in the northern United States than we do in the southern United States. I'm not worried about your sulfur getting lost because the ground's going to be frozen pretty soon. So as long as we're talking late fall rather than early fall, then I'm all on board.
Okay, so going out and spreading it next week would probably be a great thing.
I believe that it would. All right, well, hey, Kevin, thanks a lot for calling in today. Appreciate it.
All righty.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back after this.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Thanks for joining us. If you have an agronomic question, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You got a couple of equipment comments here. Ryan said you guys were talking about lime application and using a slinger, a side slinger on your show. We've been using New Leader NL600. Spreading ag lime, compost, and granular fertilizer. It's been really accurate for us. Hey, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate hearing about that. Adam said you guys were talking about controlling traffic in the field. Unfortunately, our combine doesn't seem to match up with the tractor. Combines are a little wider, so only two of the wheel tracks line up and two tracks don't. Yeah, it's not an ideal system, but there's certainly a lot of guys that are trying to do their best to line up as many rows as they possibly can to minimize compaction and traffic patterns through the fields. Thanks for the feedback there. Got this from Yusef, who said, how about gibberellin inhibitors? You were talking about plant growth hormones. Many experiments conducted all the way back into the 70s were using gibberellin inhibitors to try to control corn height until the labs reduced the size of corn plants, modifying their genes with hybrid corn. How about using gibberellin inhibitors in open pollinated corn that grows so tall and is prone to lodging?
Well, it would be a possibility. I mean, take a look at palisade, for example, that's labeled in small grains and grass seed. That reduces the amount of gibberellic acid that's going to be produced by the plant. So it's basically the same thing as what you're talking about. Where we get concerned is stress conditions. We farm in a dry area of the United States. We often have challenges not only with drought, but occasionally with heat, cold, you name it, number of stresses. Well, if you start putting any type of gibberellin inhibitor on there, along with natural stress that's occurring, it could be too much and we have yield loss. So that gets to be our worry all the time. That's why I've always been a little bit spooked right here by using palisade. If we do it at just the right time, fine. But if we don't, then it could really hurt us. And the last thing we want to do is invest money in the crop and then it hurts yield rather than helps yield. So in terms of the open pollinated corn, I have zero experience on that. I don't know. I just know that open pollinated corn versus hybrid corn, the yield just hasn't been there at all. So, I mean, otherwise people would be planting open pollinated corn because it's obviously way, way, way cheaper.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. This one comes from Scott in Pennsylvania, and he sent some soil sample results that he put into an Excel spreadsheet. He said, I love your show. Got a question regarding some soil samples we pulled after harvest this year. I'm in southwest Pennsylvania. We've been bone dry. You can see our pH is low, even though many of these fields are getting a ton or two of calcium lime last spring. I read that drought will keep pH results low. Just wondering, do you see anything else that's going to be affected by the drought? Also notice we've been building our base saturation K up and we're getting good results there, and wondering what your thoughts are on trying to build our sulfur in this type of soil.
Okay, so yeah, sometimes you will see in very, very dry conditions that pH will be represented a little bit lower, and also it's going to take more time to break down that lime that you put out there when you don't have much moisture. So it very well could happen that by next year, next summer, next fall, whatever, you're seeing those pHs, instead of being 5.6, 5.7 on average, they might be 6. I don't know. I don't know exactly how much lime you put on, what the quality of the lime, anything else. In terms of potassium, yeah, that might also be reflected slightly lower than normal, but it's not going to be super dramatic. So I would continue building that base saturation K because we still have a lot in the 2s and 3s, maybe up to 4. What we're dealing with here is barely what we would call a medium soil. I'd say on average we're looking at 11 or 12, maybe 13 cation exchange capacity, and usually 10 is kind of our cutoff. When we get to 10 and below, we really consider that a light soil. When we get to 20 and above, we consider it a heavy soil. So in that 10 to 20 range, we usually call that kind of a medium textured soil. When I see base saturation Ks down in that 3 or 4, what that tells me is the parts per million is going to be low, and it is. You've got a lot of parts per million in the mid-100s. That's not enough. So I would continue boosting that potassium. That's probably the biggest thing I see right off the bat. Also, when you have that medium textured soil, it's not going to hold sulfur or boron super well. So you're going to need annual applications of sulfur and boron. You don't have to spend a crazy amount of money or anything, but just at least a little bit of sulfur and boron on an annual basis should absolutely help you.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this one from Ed in Illinois. He said, love watching your show. Watched it in Illinois. And IBA was mentioned as an inexpensive way to improve root growth. Well, we normally get pretty good rain here in central Illinois, but city water is very expensive. Therefore, people in their lawns are using fescue instead of bluegrass. Most people don't water their lawns, and Of course, most people have some bare patches. My question is, would IBA help the fescue root a little deeper and improve its drought tolerance? I've got some older fescue in part of my lawn that's bone dry, exposed to burning sunshine all year, and it's still doing okay. But I've got some newer areas of the lawn with fescue that I try to baby for a couple of months every summer, but it never seems to take hold. Just wondering what your thought is.
Okay, first of all, IBA, for our listeners, is indole butyric acid, and that is a common plant growth hormone that is sprayed on a lot of different crops. It is kind of considered a root promotant. It will help roots grow, so you have a little bit bigger root system. Ultimately, that's a helper. What I look at more than anything all the time is, what's our fertility? So in the bad areas versus in the good areas, I'd like to see what the soil tests are. And maybe there's something there. So Darren often talks about using ammonium sulfate or using gypsum in lawns. And it could be something as simple as that, that we need more nitrogen or sulfur or calcium. So all those things also can help root growth and help overall growth. So yeah, I'd be interested in soil tests. And this is just the same thing we talk to farmers about. Okay, if you got a good area of your field and a bad area of your field, if you aren't going to do soil tests everywhere, at least soil test in those two spots, the best area and the worst area. Let's find out what's going on in that bad area versus the good area. And also, during the growing season, you can take tissue samples. You can do the same thing in lawns as you do in fields. And just at least in those, in the good spot and the bad spot, let's tissue sample. And by the between the soil tests and the tissue samples, you're going to find out most likely what's lacking or maybe what's in excess in that bad area that's causing the problem.
Right. Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. I agree. I like the soil test idea. I think that's the best way to start. Got this from Brett in Iowa. He said, I pulled a bunch of soil tests in the process of getting back our yield maps, but in the past have not had a good way to work with those digitally. Wondering what programs you're using so you can overlay your yield maps and your soil test data, or even just to manipulate the yield maps. Running an Integra system for yield mapping, we had a local co-op pull the test, but I'm pretty sure I can get the GPS from them this year. It's unlikely I'll have them pull tests in the future. I'm signed up for your seminar in South Dakota early next year, hoping that remains a go.
Okay, so two things there. First of all, in terms of our seminars, we'll put those on our website shortly. We have changed dates a little bit, and we are limiting attendance because of COVID, but we do have a 12,000-square-foot facility right on our farm, so we can spread people out. So we are going to have a workshop in January, one in February, another one in March. So we're going to be doing some of that, and we're going to be doing more online. If you want to see the stuff that we do online, just sign up for our Ag PhD magazine, because all our online stuff is available for free to any magazine subscribers. And the magazine costs $20 for 1 year, or it costs $10 a year for a 5-year subscription. Anyway, so it's very, very inexpensive. In terms of... come back, say that one, hand me that sheet one more time there, Darren. I just wanted to look at that just so I knew exactly. I didn't misstate something. Yeah. Okay. So 2.5-acre grids. That's what I was curious about. But what I would tell you is have a program. So whatever program it is you're using, it's really your yield map is what we're after. And when you move your mouse around, it should change. It should show you what the yield is at any given point, and there are going to be a crazy number of points, thousands of points on this map. You then just can almost manually overlay your grid map, and you might have to change the shape, whatever. It could just be a picture, but it's got to be opaque so you can see through it. But anyway, then you go to each grid point, and then you're still on your yield map, and you hover over that with the mouse and find, okay, where's my nearest yield point to that grid point, that soil test point? And then you just manually put down in your spreadsheet that's got all your soil test results, okay, my yield at this point was this. You manually do that, and it doesn't take very long, and you're all done.
Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that. Look forward to seeing you hopefully later this winter as well. Thanks for all the questions, and thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.